Now, guys, I have a little bit of a conspiracy theory here. I believe that Hollywood may have some kind of ulterior motive, some kind of agenda, and I believe that I have found proof. All right, welcome to another T-Rex Talk, and this one we're going to be discussing the film world, Hollywood, and how Hollywood is working with some of the different gun control organizations. And obviously, this is not a crazy conspiracy theory. This is something that is incredibly well publicized. I'm going to be linking to a report that the University of Southern California just published. It's a guide for filmmakers. It has a number of suggestions, ways that we can continue to shape the gun control narrative as filmmakers. Now, I want to give a shout out to The Reload. This is Stephen Gutowski's gun reporting arm. They have a podcast and they also do articles, and they have a good article on this one. But I want to go through the report here. I'll link to it down below in the show notes so that you are able to figure out, you know, where some of these, some of the data that is in this report comes from. Spoiler alert, it is mostly from gun control organizations, but I'm going to go over this, this report here. At first glance, this is actually a little bit tricky to figure out, because it says here, this is from the Norman Lear Center, Hollywood Health and Society, which is a part of USC. But then when you look a little closer, you realize that this was apparently created and prepared by Smith House Strategy, which is a PR firm in Los Angeles. Maybe they just did the layout, because this is pretty much just infographics. But then when you dig a little deeper, this is like copy and paste from an Everytown report called Shooting Straight, which is a depiction of gun safety on television. So, yeah, it seems like a lot of people are copying each other's work. Now, before we get started, I want to remind you guys that I used to work in film, and I worked on movies, and I was doing this at a time when film school was at a particularly useless period in time. Film school used to be a really valuable thing because the movie making equipment was really expensive and learning how to use it was really difficult. So going to a film school where people who had the equipment and had some experience using it, that actually had value. But things changed quite a bit in the 90s and even before that, where video equipment got really, really cheap and really, really accessible. And the learning curve got really, really shallow. And so what film schools were places where guys who weren't in the film business, not actually doing the work, had all this old, out-of-date equipment. And you were far, far, far better served to just learn this stuff on your own. And as time has gone on, video equipment has gotten even cheaper. Video production has gotten even more democratized. YouTube has completely changed the game. So I would say most film schools are still some of the most useless university, college or university stuff. And that's saying something. But USC is actually kind of the standout. They're actually sort of the exception that proves the rule, because USC is right there in California, right there in Los Angeles, right there next door to Hollywood. They actually have a whole bunch of people who actually do work in the film industry come in and talk to the students. You can actually build relationships with people who are working in the industry. And so out of every film school that exists on the planet, I would say that USC is actually the one that has some sort of practical benefit, even though they probably don't teach you anything that is particularly useful. The sheer closeness to the actual functioning film industry makes it, you know, worth going to. Again, only if your goal is to work in that particular Hollywood film industry, but it's worth pointing out that USC has some of the more practical, more industry-related, more functional faculty and alumni and grads, etc. And this is the university that has just released this report here. Gun Guidelines for the Media is what it is called. And like I said, this is mostly infographics. It starts out by basically making the case that you've heard probably 100,000 times before. America has more guns than people, more homicides, suicides, and unintentional deaths by firearm than any of its high-income peer countries by orders of magnitude. And the number one cause of death for children and teens in America is gun violence. So that statement about the number one cause of death for children and teens in America being gun violence is a really, really important statistic that it is used all the time. This became a talking point, I think it was in 2022, where this phrase began to be used. And I want to address that because this is one of those statements that is true if you slice and dice the statistical data exactly right. And if you look at any other data or you categorize it slightly differently, it is not true. But if you're super careful with the data, you can make this statement be true. And so this is how they open this particular guide for the media. This statement about the incredibly damaging, rapidly growing, deadly gun violence and how unique it is to the United States. And there's a bunch of extra statistics. And again, a lot of the statistics in this particular report are not wrong. They're just devoid of context. They're kind of cherry-picked. You know, they're trying to be inflammatory. And there's some statistics that have to do with the way that gun violence is portrayed in movies. And these are probably actually pretty accurate studies. Things that say that 60% of popular television series include gun-related content. I think that that is probably true. That's from Everytown. Most of the links to different studies or reports or statistics, they're going to Everytown or Brady or some other gun unfriendly group. And a lot of them are going specifically to that one report from Everytown, the shooting straight depictions of gun safety on TV report. A lot of stuff copied and pasted directly out of there, and then the citation goes back to there. But this is kind of interesting. 60% of popular television includes gun-related content. Not surprising, because that's some of the most exciting content that you could make. The majority of these are police shows, and nearly one in three episodes of a popular television show portrays at least one character discharging a firearm. Yeah, guns get boring on television if they never get fired. So that is the thing. Now, the next point is interesting. Whereas those holding guns are largely depicted as good guys, those shot by guns were typically portrayed as bad guys. This is a direct quote from the report. More than half of casualties were unsympathetic white men with small roles. You should read this for yourself, because this is kind of funny and interesting. But I will point out that this fact, that the people who are being shot are bad guys, typically portrayed as bad guys, and they are generally unsympathetic white men with small roles. This is a very interesting thing, because this is something that Hollywood has pushed for some time. People have been asking Hollywood, stop making TV shows and movies where Arabs are the bad guys, where these people are the bad guys, where those people are the bad guys, where people of certain skin color are the bad guys. Just make generic, unsympathetic white men the bad guys so that we don't offend people. But now, Everytown, and also this report here from USC, say that this is a problem. They actually put that fact in the problem category, and then they have a solution category. So let's go over some of their solutions. Again, one of their problems is something that Hollywood has been pushed to do. But let's hear some shootings. Number one, avoid portraying law enforcement use of force as heroic. Consider showing law enforcement characters facing consequences or at least scrutiny for such actions, which are rarely depicted. And the second one is humanize and diversify depictions of those affected by gun violence. So, in the past, we had cries from various groups to stop making the bad guys Arabs, stop making the bad guys black, stop making the bad guys different ethnicities or different cultural groups, just make them generic white guys so that nobody's offended. Now they're saying, no, the victims of gun violence need to be diversified. We need to start shooting Asians again. We need to start shooting Arabs again. We need to bring back Jack Bauer in 24, apparently. Point number three, appeal to common values. Heavy-handed stories can be alienating to gun owners who feel that their freedoms are threatened or their beliefs mocked. Instead of making gun owners the antagonist, appeal to the common values shared by parents and others who care about keeping safe. This is actually really interesting. This is very nuanced and clever. When you just make a generic Southern white guy the bad guy over and over and over and over again, generic Southerners stop watching your shows, because they feel attacked and alienated more than, you know, the other ethnic groups, the Mexicans, who are no longer getting to be cartel members on these TV shows. And so there is this emphasis on gun safety, showing the consequences of accidental deaths or children being killed. They talk about this later, wanting to have more child violence being depicted, because that is actually going to convince people that gun safety is a more significant issue than the generic white guy that we were told that we had to vilify earlier. And then point number four, according to research by the USC Norman Lear Center Media Impact Project, gun storylines are most effective on viewers who do not own guns. Even though gun owners are tougher, on the whole, to persuade, gun storylines still do have an effect on their opinion. In other words, your stories matter. So, apparently, if I'm reading this report correctly, the presupposition is that we are trying to persuade. We, in the media, I'm including myself in here, not just because I used to work in showbiz, but also because I'm in the media now. T-Rex publishes a bunch of YouTube videos, so I'm reading this report as if it was directed towards me and other filmmakers and content creators. It's saying that our stories matter, and that even though gun owners are tougher on the whole to persuade, gun storylines still do have an effect on their opinion. So it presupposes that what I am trying to do is to persuade people to embrace the doctrine of gun control. There's also some myths in here, myths that we should be busting in our stories. Number one, guns make the U.S. safer. That is apparently a myth because American citizens own four times the amount of guns as the next highly developed country and suffer four times the amount of gun homicides. If guns made us safer, America would be the safest country in the world. There's absolutely no cultural implications to the different crime rates in different countries at all. So I would consider that myth well and truly busted, especially since they make the U.S. has four times the number of gun homicides. They have a giant 4X, really big. So that's extra convincing. Oh, and then they have the good guy with a gun myth. This myth is used to justify lenient concealed carry legislation that allows people to carry loaded guns in public. However, a recent study found American states that allow concealed carry have higher rates of gun homicide than those that do not. And this actually has a citation to a fancy study, which, of course, once again, it's Everytown, the same Everytown report that most of the stuff is copied and pasted out of. Now, this is another statistic that gets talked about quite a bit. This recent study that found that American states that allow concealed carry have higher rates of gun homicide than those that do not. Now, remember that this year, 2023, we now have got 27 states that allow permitless carry. So the number of states that allow for concealed carry are extremely high. It is, I believe, 48 states that have been compelled by fairly recent court rulings to issue concealed carry permits. There's only a few holdouts. And so this statistic is almost meaningless at this point. Also, there are a number of specific outliers that exist. So Tennessee, for example, is an extremely gun-friendly state with high levels of gun ownership. Now, there's a lot of cleanup that we should be doing to our gun laws. But nevertheless, there is a lot of concealed carry action happening in Tennessee. But there's a very specific place in Tennessee where gun homicides are high, and that very specific city, municipality, has very different gun laws than the rest of the state. That's also true of places like Atlanta. Georgia has good gun laws, has a very high rate of concealed carry, but then Atlanta, and not even all of Atlanta, but parts of Atlanta have very strict gun laws and very high gun homicides. So I think that you know all of this, but just keep an eye out for this claim that these scary, scary, scary American states that allow for concealed carry, thanks to the Bruin decision and a whole bunch of court decisions that have used that as precedent, that is most states in the union. Those are the states that are being included in this particular claim. And there are cities inside of those states with very high homicide rates. It has nothing to do with the actual number of people who are carrying concealed. This is just states that allow concealed carry. But now if we skip down a little bit to page 9, it starts to talk about safe storage. And this is where there's a little bit more of an agenda that I see here. It talks a lot about this claim, once again, that firearms are the number one cause of death for children and teens. And again, I'm going to talk about that, but let's just go over here. They're talking about a number of different statistics. They're talking about the problems that exist. And then you can guess what the problems are. I just want to talk about the solution. Now, they have some solutions here. They would like, when characters come home with a gun, show them locking it away, separate from its ammunition, never laying the gun on the counter, bedside table, under the pillow. The action should be as natural as putting a seatbelt on while driving. Representation of safe storage is imperative to the normalization of safe storage for your audiences. And then they also say, show how quickly guns can be accessed from safe storage in an emergency. This is the sort of thing that is really interesting, and it's very subtle, but I think it also has the possibility or the potential to backfire. This presupposes that you're going to show people who own firearms using their firearms in a defensive situation, but it's really important that we show that, A, don't make retrieval of a gun from safe storage an opportunity for consequences. So never show somebody not being able to get their gun quickly enough. Point number two, audiences should not be made to feel less safe in locking a gun away securely, since the truth is empirically the opposite. No citation for that one. Not even Brady, not even Everytown. And I'm in no way opposed to showing people storing guns safely and trying to avoid accidents. The only thing that bothers me about this particular page is this particular page exists specifically because Everytown has a bunch of safe storage laws that they want to get passed, making it a crime to have guns improperly secured. It even says here on page 10, although portrayals of gun safety and gun violence prevention are rare, when they do appear, they can have a substantial impact on viewers' knowledge, attitudes, and support for what are referred to as common sense gun laws. So there it is. They're not trying to actually get people to be safer. They're trying to get people to be supportive of common sense gun laws. This is why I kind of joke about these things being conspiracy theories. Like, this is a pretty widely published report, and it's based on another pretty widely published report, and that is also based on a pretty widely published report. So this is not secret stuff. This has been splashed out there as widely as people can get it. Page 11 is talking about children's television. The typical American child sees over 40,000 simulated murders by the age of 18. That is actually a link to an Atlantic article. I remember people talking about this statistic back in the early 90s. And that is the article that they're linking to, an article from the 90s. So I don't know if this is still true. Obviously, they point out that that is a problem. And I would agree. If children are in fact seeing 40,000 simulated murders by age 18. I think that that is a problem. But here are some of the solutions, and I'm not kidding. Make the gun weird. Now, they point out that making the gun unique colors or strangely shaped or futuristic is not enough. Consider alternatives to actual firearms. Holstered ice cream scoops, teddy bear catapults, rubber ducky bubble gooshers. Get weird with it. So apparently, if we just murder people with different objects, the 40,000 simulated murders would be okay. If people are getting killed by holstered ice cream scoops. That actually is something that I assume that we will see in the next Taken movie. Liam Neeson is going to kill somebody with an ice cream scoop, and it is going to be far, far more horrifying than being shot with a 9mm. Page 12 talks about mass shootings, and I actually think that there's some useful data here. There's a very excellent point that is made on this page. It says here, the problem is that there are bigger problems. Although suicides account for the majority of gun deaths in the United States, nearly 1 in 4 Americans believe mass shootings to be the greatest gun violence threat facing their communities. However, mass shootings accounted for just 1% of all gun deaths in the year 2020. And yet, 95% of American public K-12 schools have implemented active shooter drills, and at least 40 states have mandated them. But guns in the home, not school, pose the biggest threat to children. I actually think that it's very interesting that they've pointed this out. The media has done the most work at making mass shootings feel very imminent and widespread and extremely likely. But this report points out that the numbers don't really back that up. But you can see the motivation here. You know, the real threat is guns at home. So that is what we want to change people's minds about, according to this report. If we skip down to page 15, they actually point out mass shootings are 6 times as likely to make the news as any other kind of gun death. And they point that out as a problem. So excellent, excellent. And you can kind of imagine how the rest of the report goes. They talk about intimate partner violence. They talk about the way that news reports on different things, and they talk about suicide, and basically pull out a bunch of statistics, and sometimes they're asking genuinely, how can the media solve some of these problems? Is there something that the media is doing to increase people's risk of suicide because suicide is contagious? There are some pages in here that feel like very genuine attempts to solve social problems, and the media, you know, or at least the guys writing the report, saying that the media has some level of influence over some of these cultural issues. But most of the pages that are in here are specifically talking about about how can we get people on board with certain types of legislative changes? How can we get people to change the laws? How can we get people to change people's perceptions of reality? Yeah, it's pretty obvious. And then at the end, there's a couple of pages with endnotes. And if you count through these, you will see that the vast majority of the reports that they link to, most of the citations, are really obviously biased newspapers and publications. And then 20 of the 52 footnotes go to Brady or Everytown. Now, I want to talk about statistics for a moment. Let's go back to that statement. This statement that guns are the leading cause of death for children in the United States, this statement that became ubiquitous in 2022. So the first thing that you have to do to make that true is that you have to not count kids under 1 year old, because kids under 1 year old often die from various congenital diseases and defects and birth complications and things like that. I don't think that's necessarily deceitful, but people rarely make that point when they make this statement. But then on the high end, you got to do something else. You got to make sure that you include 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds, but not 20-year-olds. If you include 18 and 19-year-olds, you get a lot of good homicide data. But if you include 20-year-olds, they have a lot more car accidents. They completely mess up the data. So you have to make sure you include 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds. And this requires that you fudge the data a little bit, because traditionally, when you have talked about kids, you're either talking about those people who are under 18 or those people who are under 21. And if you use either of those age ranges, guns are not the leading death of children. You have to come up with this new category, which is starting at age 1 and ending at age 19. No 20-year-olds. And the other thing that you have to do is you have to only look at data from the years 2020 and 2021. And the reason that it's important that you look at this data is because there were a number of lockdowns in a number of different places in that particular date range, and that resulted in abnormally low traffic deaths. That is why guns killed more people in this very specific age range during that very specific date range. Traffic accidents were lower and traffic deaths were way lower. But the other thing is that those years included abnormally high suicide rates for reasons that nobody will ever be able to understand or guess about ever. And unfortunately, the suicide rates of young people were really, really high. Child suicide rates skyrocketed at that time. And there isn't a whole lot of good data on this. There haven't been studies yet. I think because now is not the right time politically for people to talk about this. But if you talk in a roundabout way to people like folks at Vanderbilt University, they have their own child suicide survivor department now. That was something that did not used to be necessary, and it didn't used to be busy. And in 2020, that became incredibly, incredibly busy. Again, we don't have great statistics on this yet, but anecdotal data suggests that child suicide went up way, way, way higher than adult suicide, and we should get those numbers in a couple of years. But suicide numbers in general, as a whole, we do have those numbers for the year 2020 and the year 2021. They are higher than normal, and that really helps push this particular age group into homicide and suicide gun violence deaths higher than your vehicle death rates and your other medical death rates. We also had some various events. I can't really remember what they were, but in the summer of 2020, there were various outdoor activities that resulted in higher than average firearm homicides in certain large cities. And I can't remember what those were. But these are the sorts of things that make the years 2020 and the years 2021, that is the only time that you can really look at where the firearm deaths are higher than vehicle and other medical deaths for these very specific age ranges of children. So you can always look at the statistics and you can always pick through the data and you can make it say kind of whatever you want. If you cherry pick this data and you find some flukes like the year 2020 and the year 2021, and you find some flukes like 19-year-olds but not 20-year-olds, then you can tie these together into a statistic that gives you a statement like guns are the leading cause of death for children in the United States. And I actually think that this is a pretty useful statement, not because it is practically true. It is technically true with a bunch of caveats that never get included, but it's actually a really good indicator statistic. If you're reading a report and they open the report with that statement, you know that they haven't actually done any good research. If you are reading an article in The Atlantic or any of the other fine journalistic institutions and establishments that are cited by this particular report, and they start articles with that particular statement, then yeah, you know that the quality of the research is not really going to be super high. They're not trying to find the truth about some of these things. They are trying to just make a statement. And this report from USC, which apparently is also from Smith House Strategy, which apparently is also from Everytown, is mostly trying to make a statement, which is why it is kind of interesting that in the middle of the report, there are some interesting questions that people are trying to answer that don't seem to have the same assumption that we're all on board with trying to pass gun laws. There are some pages in there by whoever compiled this thing, generally about suicide, that feel genuine and different. But there's also a whole bunch of pages in this particular report that essentially say nothing and make me wish that we were all a little bit better at statistics and critical thinking. So if you have this report open, I want you to scroll up to page 5. This is a page that says almost nothing. It's the one that talks about officer-involved shootings. And they talk about how Black Americans make up less than 13% of the U.S. population, but are killed by police at more than twice the rate of white Americans. That is a Washington Post citation right there. And then they talk about just the number of officer-involved shootings. They say that 1,100 people are killed by police every year, and that this number has not changed since 2015. So police shooting is not on the rise, even though other pages in this document say that gun homicides are on the rise, the crime is on the rise, a lot of these things are on the rise. Apparently, police intervention, whether it is justifiable or not, it's not on the rise. And then they mentioned a study done by the National Police Foundation. They released a study of over 1,000 police shootings at 45 different departments, and they discovered that 4 out of 5 officers who had fired in those shootings had never discharged their guns before, which is, that is not true. Those guys are required to qualify, which means that they've fired their weapon at least once. Sometimes several bullets are fired. But I'm sure what the author means to say, they've never fired their guns in the line of duty before. Then they state within those shootings, there are officers who do seem to be involved in multiple fatal shootings without consequence, which, yeah, it's pretty obvious. If 4 out of 5 officers have never done this before, 1 out of 5 officers have done this before. And if they have done it again, then they have done it multiple times. Yeah. Throughout this document, a number of statistical statements that are like that. They're completely unnecessary. They don't particularly say anything. But if you come into this document with the presuppositions that we are supposed to have as media professionals, then I guess we're supposed to take meaning from page 5. Now, there is something that is kind of encouraging about this document, at least to me, because this is a suggestion. It's being sent out by the premier film school of the United States directly to folks in Hollywood and people who are creating fictional television and film universes, because they really want to shape the narrative. And by the way, that is not my phrase. If you go to page 3, it says here, this is the introduction. As a storyteller, you are in a unique position to change the narrative, reset the bar, and provide representation of safe, acceptable behavior when it comes to firearms. Your voice and talents are needed now more than ever. Your stories matter. So this is an idea that I personally just talked about a lot over the last several years when I was involved in media and I was talking to people, Christians and conservatives that wanted to get into film and get into television. I would often bring up that Hollywood has an agenda, that films are very powerful. And I actually got a lot of pushback, again, mostly from people who wanted to be in Hollywood. They wanted to be a benign, neutral place where they could do what they wanted without there being any cultural implications. Film is just entertainment. There's a famous quote from one of the studio heads way back. If you want to send a message, call Western Union. But we all actually know deep down that media has a major, major, major cultural impact. And films and television shows that portray fictional characters doing things with firearms are going to have big, big impact on the way that people think about these things. And the people who are graduating from USC and going into the film industry and writing and producing and directing and being in those movies are going to have a big, big effect on the culture. Now, the good news is, they used to have a pretty significant cultural monopoly. They used to actually control a lot of the filmmaking and a lot of the television. And, well, to a large extent, I think that they still do. But there are a number of different types of media that exist now. I think that YouTube has been fundamentally important in changing the wider population's perception about firearms and an understanding of what firearm ownership is and what firearm safety is. One of the really fascinating statistics that is not in this document is that firearm safety has actually improved immensely over the last 40 years. I'll look for an actual study that I can cite, and it will not be from Brady or from Everytown, but we have actually had firearm accidents come down to a quarter of what they used to be 40 years ago. And if you bear in mind that there's probably twice as many guns, twice as many privately owned guns now than 40 years ago, that means that the safety is actually 8 times better than it used to be. That's probably unfair because a lot of those guns are owned by the same people. But the population of the United States has gone up quite a bit over the last 40 years, like another 50%. So gun safety probably 6 times better today than 40 years ago. That is a massive, massive change that I don't think Hollywood has particularly contributed to. And despite some of Hollywood's best efforts to affect the culture war and a lot of their phenomenal wins, there is a significant amount of alternative media that has had a really important impact. And I'm encouraged that we can actually talk about this a little bit more openly now. I mean, now when I talk about the fact that Hollywood and various universities like the University of Southern California want to shape the narrative, and they actually are publishing reports that include change the narrative right there in the introduction. I think that that's great. In the words of Han Solo, I prefer a straight fight to all this sneaking around. And it's always bugged me that people in the past would make these incredibly culturally powerful films and then say, no, it's just entertainment. There's absolutely nothing going on under the surface. It is only entertainment. And by the way, these are the same people who will pay millions of dollars for 30 seconds of Super Bowl ad time. It is obvious that 30 seconds of Super Bowl ad drastically changes the way that people spend their money to the tune of millions and millions of dollars. So a 90-minute feature film with characters and music and empathy and all these things, yeah, obviously it's going to have an input, and obviously it's going to shape the narrative. And it's nice that everybody kind of agrees that that is the case now. We can talk about it openly, we can talk about it very directly, and we have some alternative media to sort of push back against this. Another thing that I think is relatively new is we have a lot better studies that are being done. There are groups like Gun Owners of America that have been around for a long time. There are groups like the Second Amendment Foundation has been around for a long time as well. And they conducted some really early study of firearm defensive use and firearm legislative stuff in the past, the way that certain firearm laws that were being cited one way in the 20th century had been interpreted a completely different way in the past. There wasn't really good scholastic research on this. There weren't really good studies being done in academia. And that is something that has also changed in the last few decades. So my encouragement for you is to be very careful when you watch movies, because they contain very important messages. They contain very powerful, world-altering, narrative-changing agendas, and they always have. The good news is University of Southern California and other folks are a little more upfront about it now. Everybody's a little bit more upfront about it now, so be cautious when you watch these things. But the other thing is, I want to be kind of careful when it comes to the issue of gun safety. Obviously, I am completely opposed to government mandates on how guns should be stored. But I also don't think that gun safety is something that we should take lightly. And I'm very encouraged to see that the statistics are moving in the right direction on that. So let us continue to improve when it comes to gun safety. Let us continue to oppose the government mandates. Let's continue to be careful when it comes to dangerous cultural payloads carried by entertainment. And let's talk clearly about these things. And I'd love to hear from you guys. I am curious to know, would you like more podcast episodes that go into some of these commonly cited statistics, like the sort of fact that guns are the leading cause of death for certain children at certain times in certain parts of the United States? Or would you like some cultural exploration of Hollywood? I could actually talk at great length about film schools and my opinion of them, especially at specific times that they have reflected, I think, really accurately and clearly sort of the underlying worldview of academia. But that's kind of a niche, nerdy topic. I'd rather focus on the stuff that you are particularly interested in and would find particularly useful. So let the customer service guys know what podcast content you are interested in. We will start working on that. And yeah, we got a lot of plans for more alternative media that we want to create. And we're working on it even as we speak. But I also want to thank you guys, because I think that we have a lot more discerning listeners and watchers and media consumers now than we did 20 or 30 years ago. And even though there are still an awful lot of gatekeepers over alternative media on YouTube and Instagram and other social networks, there is a lot more freedom to create stuff. And a lot of that has to do with guys like you. The fact that you are listening to this podcast, the fact that you have turned a lot of GunTubers into guys with audiences, and that you have very deliberately made certain choices about the media that you want to consume and support, we're seeing the fruit of that. So well done. Continue to be discerning, continue to be careful, and continue to look for important messages that need pushing. The algorithms are getting much, much better at very quietly sidelining certain things. So I think all of us are going to have to do a better job at recommending stuff for one another. So that's my other homework assignment. If you have found some particularly good resources that are not well known, that are not getting the attention that they should, send them my way. team@trex-arms.com. We would like to continue to support the citizen defense industry and equip those serious citizens with everything, including information.